Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Thursday, November 12th. The Secretary of State of Montana is a man named Corey Stapleton. As Secretary of State, Stapleton's job includes overseeing elections and monitoring for any voter fraud. This Republican Secretary of State has now posted a message that says, "I have supported you, Mr. President. Donald Trump accomplished some incredible things during your time in office, but that time is now over. Tip your hat, bite your lip, and congratulate Joe Biden." Unquote. That's from the Republican Secretary of State of Montana. Republican Senator James Lankford, U.S. Senator from Oklahoma, said yesterday that he will intervene if the Trump administration doesn't start sharing the presidential daily brief on national security with Biden by the end of the week. That's a reliable Republican, Senator James Lankford. So there are some cracks in the wall of denial and authoritarian tactics of pretending to have won an election you lost, or at very least have apparently lost. To actually challenge those results, as you know, would require proof of massive voter fraud in multiple states on a scale completely unprecedented in American history. Nonetheless, the Trump campaign is in court in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and elsewhere, trying to have millions of ballots suppressed on what is so far the flimsiest of claims. And the New York Times called officials in every state and found no evidence of voter fraud. The headline on that story was straightforward. The Times called officials in every state, no evidence of voter fraud. It said officials contacted by the Times said there were no irregularities that affected the outcome. We'll talk to one of the reporters on that story in a minute. But here's another story from the Times about how rumors of voter fraud, based on nothing, take root in the land of alternative facts. The story says it started Monday evening with a tweet that pushed an unfounded rumor that a Michigan mother's vote had been stolen by an impersonator using her maiden name. The tweet came with a hashtag, MaidenGate. Soon, the claim that unauthorized people had cast votes under the maiden names of real voters, multiple voters, started trending online. From Monday to Wednesday morning, more than 75,000 posts pushing MaidenGate, hashtag MaidenGate, appeared on Twitter, peaking at 2,000 between 2:10 and 2:15 a.m. on Tuesday, according to Dataminer, a tool for analyzing social media interactions. Beyond Twitter, the MaidenGate rumors spread to Facebook, YouTube, and groups associated with Stop the Steal, which have promoted the false narrative that Democrats stole the election from President Trump. But no evidence was offered to support the MaidenGate claim in the original tweet, which was posted by a Twitter account with a profane name. The tweet included no details on the maiden name that supposedly had been stolen, so there was no way to verify the claim. Twitter has since suspended the account, and the message is no longer visible. That from the New York Times. The rumor spread anyway, despite everything that was reported there. Joining us now, Nick Corisanti, who covers politics around the U.S. for the New York Times. Nick, thanks for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
People have been talking about that headline, "The Times called officials in every state, no evidence of voter fraud." Can you tell us how that reporting assignment went, how the story was reported leading to that sweeping conclusion?
Yeah, we started with the thought of, you know, there have been all these allegations coming from the Trump campaign and Republican allies about, you know, widespread voter fraud and all these irregularities that, you know, swung the election away from them. So we started at first, you know, just contacting the specific allegations they had made in states and election officials in those states. And we thought as we were doing that, you know, the whole picture that had kind of been painted by the president, his campaign, and his Republican allies, you know, from before the election, dating a long time ago, has been that the, you know, kind of United States electoral process is rife with fraud, which is just not true. So we thought we will reach every state and talk to the top elections official in every state most of the time that's a Secretary of State. Occasionally, there's a election commission, like in Wisconsin, where there's top election administrator. And we just ask them, you know, have you seen any evidence of fraud or any kind of other irregularities that would have played a role in the outcome of the presidential race, whether it would, you know, have these impacts? And we heard back directly from 45 of them. And they all said, no, you know, there were varying degrees of saying, absolutely not. This is ridiculous. Others just saying our election was smooth. We're proud of it. Four that did not get back to us had already made statements saying as much. And then the only one that didn't ever directly respond to us was Texas. But we contacted the top elections official in Harris County, the Harris County clerk, his office. And Harris County is home to Houston. And mm-hmm. it's got a population of about 4.7 million, which is bigger than about 25 states. And they saw no evidence. So that's kind of how we went through everything to get to the conclusion that we drew.
By the way, I think I said your last name wrong. It's Corasaniti?
Yes, it is.
I apologize. Nick Corasaniti from the New York Times, our guest. Let me stay on that aberration of Texas for a minute, because you reported that the Republican Lieutenant Governor of Texas, Dan Patrick, already infamous for saying old people should be prepared to die from the coronavirus so younger people can live normal lives, that Dan Patrick, he has offered a $1 million reward fund for anyone, or I should say established a $1 million reward fund, I guess it wouldn't all go to one person, for anyone reporting voter fraud. But Trump won Texas, so if his reward fund is intended to help Trump flip the results, how does that help?
Well, exactly. There is, it's not necessarily clear whether Lieutenant Governor Patrick's reward was just for Texas or whether, you know, it could be one of these, like, we're seeing a couple funds pop up among right-aligned groups that are, like, offering rewards for reports or affidavits of voter fraud. But, you know, kind of looking beyond that, if we're talking about Texas and we're trying to say, you know, did Texas experience any of these irregularities or anything? And obviously, from what we've heard, the prevailing answer is no, even though state officials never got back to us. You'd wonder why Lieutenant Governor Patrick would feel the need to announce a fund to reward reports if they already had a preponderance of evidence. And, you know, he has been pretty vocal in making claims that, you know, without any evidence that there was kind of widespread voter fraud in the past. So it kind of fits with what he has said kind of throughout his career. But it certainly doesn't necessarily instill any kind of confidence, again, that there's any major evidence in Texas if you're offering money to reward reports of voter fraud.
And since Texas was still a red state in this presidential election, wouldn't it be funny if his $1 million turned up so much Republican voter fraud in his state that he wound up flipping it the other way? But, of course, there doesn't seem to be evidence of widespread fraud on either side, so I guess he's not worried about it. It's political theater. In Michigan, home we now know of the debunked Maidengate rumor, you report Republican lawmakers on Saturday voted to issue subpoenas for documents in search of, quote, election irregularities. This is sort of the legal version, it seems to me, of legal meaning, you know, the legal establishment, legal process version of Dan Patrick's $1 million reward fund. So did you talk to an elections official in Michigan for your story?
We did, yes. And kind of what they said, well, the official who actually has responded more directly to some of these machinations in the legislature has actually been the Attorney General of Michigan, who is, you know, kind of defending the state in some of these lawsuits. And they said, you know, the move by the Republican lawmakers in Michigan kind of follows a pattern that we've seen in both Wisconsin and Pennsylvania. So the three blue wall states that are all controlled by Republicans in the state houses, and they've all announced these, you know, some type of investigative body. Now, and I think in Wisconsin, they're issuing subpoenas, as they did in Michigan. Pennsylvania says they want an audit. And part of it appears to just be, you know, fitting with the Republican theme of wanting to investigate everything, claiming that they want every legal ballot counted, which of course I'm sure everyone does. But then part of it, there's also a bit of a fear that this is a delay tactic and a stall tactic to just kind of gum up the works, slow it down, possibly delay certification, which could lead to a whole host of other issues, whether they're legally sound or not, who knows. But, you know, even when you talk to the Attorney General of Michigan, you know, they're also saying that these moves by Republican lawmakers are, again, unlikely, extremely unlikely to turn up any evidence because in their work, they haven't seen any, you know, widespread or any kind of fraud that, or irregularities that would impact the results. And, you know, there's I haven't checked this morning, but I'm pretty sure Vice President Biden or President-elect Biden's lead in Michigan is about 150,000 votes.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty significant lead for no matter what.
That's really big. And by the standards of this election and by what we consider a swing state where Trump won by such a sliver, I think it was a few tens of thousands of votes in Michigan or 10,000 votes in Michigan, a fraction of 1% in 2016. This is a 3 percentage point win, I believe the number is, for Biden as he leads there by the last number I saw was 146,000 votes. So that's not going to get overturned by a recount. So the Republican legislators are on this fishing expedition there with no evidence that's triggering it, just the hope of finding something to let their team win when it looks like they lost. And sure, they're allowed to turn over every rock to make sure. Why wouldn't somebody want to do that with so much at stake? But without any good leads to make them believe something is there, is it clear to you what documents in search of election irregularities they are even issuing subpoenas for?
It's not, at least not insofar as what we've seen. They kind of, you know, the Trump campaign and Republican allies file like a new lawsuit every day, it seems like, and lawmakers in different states have, you know, slowly progressed in these committees or other investigatory efforts. You know, there's been a lot of focus in social media from some of these lawmakers and kind of, you know, Republican personalities about a focus on people who either voted illegally or dead people voting, meaning that someone impersonated or, you know, took a ballot that had been sent to someone who died. And none of those have really held up to scrutiny. Oftentimes it's someone has the same name as their father and it was, or mother, and it was, you know, entered by a clerical error. Other times there's a certain way to enter names in a poll book that just defaults to 1900 to save a place. And then when it's updated, they put in the correct birth date. And sometimes there's just a clerical error there. So a lot of like what they've looked for and what they make big headlines about, I think Tucker Carlson made a huge deal about two different voters, one of which we already know was just the name of his son. You know, so they seem to be hunting for these specific anecdotes that, again, always fall apart to kind of paint a broad picture when that broad picture doesn't necessarily exist.
By the way, my producer checked on the Michigan numbers from 2016, just for the record. Trump had 2,279,000 votes to Clinton's 2,268,000 votes. In other words, Trump won by a little less than 11,000 votes in Michigan in 2016. That was out of, you know, 5 million votes cast. That was 0.3%. So if you look at it that way, Biden won by 10 times as much as Trump won, comparing the two elections. But that's just one data point. Listeners, if you have any questions about the New York Times reporting on the so far futile search for election fraud in the 50 states in the presidential election, you can call up and talk to Nick Corasaniti at 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280. Before we go on to some other states and some big picture questions, I want to go back to something you said about the point in Michigan with the spread being as big as we were just describing, you said they may not be looking to flip the results so much as to create a delay. And this ties back, some of our listeners will know, to the sort of the ultimate Democrats' paranoid theory, but paranoids really have enemies sometimes, that we've been talking about on the show the last few days. And that is that the goal is really to just cast enough doubt, create enough delay in the courts to pass the December 8th certification deadline and let the legislature have an excuse, the Republican-led legislature, have an excuse for taking the electors away from the people and appointing the electors themselves and appointing Trump electors instead of Biden electors to the Electoral College. Do you see that as a realistic possibility in Michigan?
Realistic would probably be giving a little too much credence to it, I think. It's certainly, you know, it seems to be what they're doing. And the Attorney General, Dana Nessel, yesterday said exactly that. You know, it looks like this legal strategy that the Trump campaign is bringing in Michigan isn't necessarily to find some, again, 146,000 votes to overturn. It's more to slow it up and make this play for, you know, electors. But a lot of, you know, legal experts that I've spoken to as we've tried to understand where this is, you know, are pretty dubious that it would actually work. I mean, A, it would, you know, invoke a huge outcry, I think, if you're trying to overturn the will of a lot of people. But it's also, you know, it's a very vague area. It's never really, obviously never really been done. And there's a pretty prevailing legal argument that says even if you were to take this on its face and say, this is the plan that they're aiming for, this is what they want to do, from what some legal experts have told me, they would have need to have passed something to allow them to do this before the election. And once the election's already happened, it's too late. You can't say, you know, we're going to move in and name our own slate of electors. It's just not, there's no constitutional authority for them to do that. That's one kind of prevailing argument that I've heard from a lot of legal experts on both sides. That said, you know, there's some who still think it could be possible. And as the Michigan Attorney General said, it does seem to be the Trump campaign strategy, at least in Michigan, where they're losing, you know, by so much compared to other states.
Is there a problem in your reporting experience with partisan oversight, or are there institutional checks and balances in the state systems around the country for how votes are really counted, or fraud, if it were to occur, is detected?
So I think it's perhaps a little bit of both. I don't think that there's necessarily, like Josh Shapiro hasn't done anything as a attorney general to cause any kind of concerns in any of the reporting we've done that, you know, he's acting in a partisan fashion. And I haven't come across any attorney generals in this election in a similar way, you know, who have come from a partisan position to kind of help their cause. The problem, there's kind of, I guess, two issues there is just that in a hyper-polarized electorate and where, you know, seemingly every charge, whether it's true or not, is just lobbed, I think as the Washington Secretary of State Kim Wyman described to us, it's like throwing grass at a fence and seeing what sticks. And obviously, grass rarely sticks to the fence. You know, just saying, oh, well, the Democrats are in charge here, so they must be working against us. And if you approach everything with that lens and get your supporters to believe everything through that lens, then the trust is further eroded. And that's kind of been, you know, at least from the president's mouthpiece, you know, his goal is just continually eroding trust in this process. Now, when it comes to, you know, having a Republican or a Democrat election official as the state's top election official, whether that has any impact on voting, oftentimes not directly, but, you know, sometimes when you see a policy come out of a Secretary of State's office, knowing their leanings, you can kind of understand maybe what they're getting at. And one example would be Brad Raffensperger in Georgia. Now, he, you know, greatly expanded voting by mail in the this year for both coronavirus reasons and just because that was what Georgia law allowed him to do. But at the same time, he set up this ballot integrity task force that, you know, was trumpeted as with, you know, full prosecutorial powers that, you know, if anyone tried to vote illegally, they would be sentenced and punished to the fullest extent of the law, and they would, you know, bring the weight of the government down, and it was very heavy-handed in the way it was delivered. And when you think, you know, how a voter views voting by mail for the first time, they could be scared, you know, they might think that an error is going to lead to them being arrested. So a lot of voting rights advocates, like Common Cause, called that ballot task force creation and the way it was announced as, you know, a partisan voter suppression effort. Now, who knows whether it actually had that effect on anyone. But sometimes when policies like that are rolled out and you know the partisan leaning of an elections official, it can be viewed that way as, you know, what happened in Georgia, particularly from voting rights advocates' point of view.
Washington State, right? Not in the spotlight like Georgia and Pennsylvania and Michigan, Washington State. And you report that the losing Republican candidate for governor, Lauren Culp, in this reliably blue state, has disputed their Republican Secretary of State's determination that the election there was free of fraud. The Secretary of State in this case is named Kim Wyman, who has in turn challenged Mr. Culp's challenge of her. Culp is trailing, you report, by roughly 14 percentage points in the result. And it was Wyman who gave that quote that you cited a few minutes ago. It's just throwing grass at the fence at this point. See what sticks. So what's amazing to me about that story is that Culp lost by 14 points. Maybe if you lost by 1 point, like, you know, Trump in Pennsylvania, or 3 points like Trump in Michigan, you can try to shake the trees for voter fraud. Even those are looking far-fetched. But he lost by 14 points. So what's even his point?
It's kind of hard to understand, but I think it speaks to kind of how what President Trump's continual questioning and kind of baseless allegations about the electoral process, the impact it has had kind of writ large on our elections, is that, you know, this, you know, Republican candidate for governor who is down by, my quick math, I think by about 500,000 votes, 2.27 million to 1.71 million. Obviously, there's no way that there could be, you know, some kind of widespread fraud that could bring that back up. And Secretary Wyman is among the most experienced and, you know, kind of trusted secretaries of state in the country. Washington has been one of the five states that has actually been a vote-by-mail state for years. They weren't someone like, say, Pennsylvania, who had to ramp up their vote-by-mail process to meet, you know, unprecedented demand for the first time. This was a pretty normal election for Washington. So to kind of bring that allegation in a state that's done this for so long against the Secretary of State, who's done this for a while, and is kind of looked to as a leader on vote-by-mail, just shows that people feel comfortable throwing the allegation of voter fraud around, you know, kind of no matter the reality on the ground. It's just, okay, I've seen other people do this. The president has kind of given the green light to do this. So in a deeply blue state with a pretty popular governor, Jay Inslee, and a pretty established voting system in the state that wasn't, you know, specifically or really harshly challenged this year, they can still just bring up these baseless accusations of fraud.
Nick Corasaniti covers domestic politics for the New York Times. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.